So, guys, Joel, we'll start with your question first. Since, well, it's not really a question, but you posted in the group about the Russian girl. So the backstory for those of you guys who haven't seen the post is that Joel met a Russian girl, Ukrainian, same difference. And things are progressing. You guys have hooked up, and she's now, you know, basically she's telling Joel how much she likes him, and she's expressing her feelings very openly, which is very normal for Eastern European girls, which is what makes them awesome. They're very open and direct with how they feel and what they want, which is why I take you guys to Eastern Europe for the Euro trip, because that's what you get to practice doing, is you get to practice being direct and open, and you get rewarded for it a lot more over there. So it's a cultural thing, and that's very common. That's what you would expect to have happen with a girl from the East. It doesn't mean you should change your game plan. You should still stick to, you know, the dating protocol and not see her too often if you don't want like a real exclusive thing. But girls are traditional there too. So, you know, once they start fucking you, they're going to try to quickly get you into some sort of monogamous relationship. They won't be afraid to tell you how they feel about you being with other people and all that good stuff. So, the play for you, Joel, is since you're, you know, obviously looking to improve and you know, have a lifestyle in which you're dating more than one girl one time, you should be very careful how often you see her. She's going to try to see you a lot, and she's going to try to progress things very quickly. And it's your job to kind of, you know, you don't have to lie to her. You can be open with her, and you can tell her where you're at and what you're doing. But if you see her more than once a week, it's going to be hot and heavy really fast, and then end really fast too, which is probably not what you want.
No, she's great. You know, she might be moving to California. She made some mention of, you know, I was planning on moving to California before I met you. And I was like, well, you should move to California. You know, she was touched by that because she was saying how much of a connection we have. And, you know, she's very, yeah, all the things you're saying is what she's doing. She's very affectionate. She's you know, at first she was a little standoffish, but once we started getting to know each other, she was just all over me. And it's very refreshing. It brings up these like feelings of being in love. It's a pretty wild thing, because I, you know, I'm not used to a girl being just genuine and open and honest. So right. Great. She's great.
Mm-hmm. Eastern European women are the best. That's how it goes. So
no surprises I'm gonna there. Have to go with you guys.
Yeah. There we go. they're a lot different than American chicks.
Yeah, for sure.
All right.
Hey, can I ask you another question?
Sure.
Sure. So when you're talking to like off the charts hot girl, is it just the same process to get used to? I'm just going to have to talk to a lot of them and just get used to it.
Yeah, it's exactly the same. You can just expect that, you know, that they're used to being hit on. So they're probably going to be more apt to like, you know, throw shit your way. They're going to be a little bit more like sticklers, you could say, on stuff. You know, they have such a huge reservoir of dealing with bullshit that their bullshit detectors are off the hook. So try to bullshit them, they're more likely going to figure it out. So that's the only difference.
Okay. Got it. Thanks, Robbie.
Yeah. So yeah, hit on more hot girls. That's the key there.
Yeah, well, this is in LA. I can't. I can't like go down the street and hit on, you know, eights, nines, and tens all day.
Yeah.
So I mean, I'm encountering them, but it's not. I mean, I wish there was a place where there was just a concentration of them.
Well, yeah,
but you have to come to LA more often. Yeah, for sure.
Kevin asked, I think the more I approach, the more I see that girls are just being polite to me, generally. Good job, Kevin. That's probably true. I think compared to other guys who get girls' attention before they even open, I feel like girls are expecting me to ask for directions when I approach. I need to approach with more intentionality. At the same time, I'm scared that a girl would scream or someone nearby would ask if she needs the police. And even if she says no, whatever sexual tension would be gone. So I want to know what's missing in my mindset. It's good that they are expecting you to ask for directions when you approach them. You know, that's normal, right? You walk to a girl, she has no idea what the fuck you want. She's probably not expecting you to hit on her. That's the beauty of day game. So when you ask, when you tell her you're, you know, when you stop her, yeah, she's going to think you're looking for directions, and that's good. So I don't think you need to change anything. I just think if they're being polite, it means, you know, there's something about you that they're not finding attractive. Maybe it's your ability to deal with sexual tension, like when, you know, when you're not really holding eye contact enough, or you're laughing when you're delivering the lines instead of, you know, giving her that solid, like, masculine gaze and waiting for her to respond. You're too quick to answer her questions. Now, these are all good practice calls you can do with Carly. Joseph's been doing a lot of these and really improving. So, you know, some subtle verbal and nonverbal things that are giveaways that, you know, you don't date girls like them, and therefore they don't want to talk to you anymore. I think that's the only thing that's happening there, Kevin. Let me see if there's some other questions here. Anyone want to hear a lecture on organizing their shit?
Sure.
Well, the short answer is do it. The reason why it's so important to organize your shit is, just from a mental standpoint, at least for me, everything became just more clear when I can look at any area of my life, you know, whether it be my finances, my taxes, odds and ends, my credit, all these things that, you know, can cause problems in life. If you're organized, you know where things are mentally. If you know where your paperwork is, if you know, you know, what your budgets are, how much money you're making each month, what your expenses are, what your credit card bills are, like, it just really allows you to be mentally clear and free. And there's so much time that people waste, like, cleaning up messes and dealing with messes, that they never have time to just chill and have fun. And it's crazy. It's like, I have so much time. My biggest, like, mental, like, the thing that makes me feel sad or, like, bad or guilty all the time is the fact that I have so much time and I fuck off so often. Like, I party almost every day. And I wake up at, like, 2 in the afternoon. I'm like, gosh, maybe I shouldn't be partying so much. But I'm like, well, I'm making good money. Like, yeah, I could be doing more. I could be growing IC more, which is, like, my biggest complaint I have to myself. And but, like, I'm doing well, so it's hard for me to really, like, beat myself up for that, if that makes sense to you guys. And the reason why I have so much free time is because I have all of, like, I've automated and systematized everything, and or I've outsourced it, and I'm really fucking organized. I know where everything is. I don't have to put out fires very often. So when you're constantly putting out fires, that's when shit gets gets really busy. And yeah, so that's my rant. Any thoughts on that?
Robbie, can you talk more about, I'm intrigued that sort of, you know, even though everything is automated and you have a lot of free time, that you don't sort of feel any compulsion to do things. I mean, I found that regardless of like objectively how much or how little work I have, the thought of not working or not doing something just it drives me up the wall. I mean, I would have to make a real proactive effort to relax and wind down and not do anything. I mean, I'm not even sure I could sort of tolerate an hour or two of not doing anything. And
that's not what I'm saying at all. Sorry to that it maybe sounded like that. I'm constantly doing shit all the time. Like I'm never just sitting there idly. I never watch TV. But I'm not working as much as I feel like I should be, if that makes sense. Like I'm spending a lot of time doing leisure activities, like taking Wiley to the park or hanging out with my girlfriend, going out and partying. And partying leads to business deals and meeting people and stuff like that. So it's never frivolous partying. I'm not just partying to party. I'm always like, you know, killing two birds with one stone and expanding my network. And partying is a huge part of that. And sometimes when I'm taking you guys out as well, that counts as work, right? So it feels like partying, but it counts as work. Also, when I party, it gives me content to talk about. There's a lot of interactions with girls that I can talk about and whatnot. So I'm not just sitting idly, not doing anything. I'm constantly doing stuff, which is why I'm always busy. But I'm not like frantically running around, like, you know, trying to put out fires is maybe a better way of saying it. Does that clear it up?
Yeah, no, that makes much more sense.
Yeah. Other questions on that? Okay, let's move on. Moz recently asked me a question on Facebook. Moz, you're on the call now, right? See your name there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Cool. Let me talk about your question as far as Airbnb shit goes. I wanted to ask you about Airbnb. I think I'm in a position to start looking for apartments around Queens, New York. I wanted to know if there was any material I could read or if you have any ideas how I can get started. Sure, tons of ideas. First off, have you gone through the stuff in the free course on Airbnb?
Not exactly.
Okay. I'll link that to you. I'll send you over the Facebook chat. You've heard us talk about it quite a bit, though, in passing, or trying to figure out how much you know.
Yeah, I have heard you guys talk about it. I've done some research on my own, so that's why I just figured I'd reach out and see what you guys could tell me.
Yeah, so the Airbnb game is really simple. You find a place that is in an area that has a lot of tourists, and that's fucking anywhere in New York. That's a great thing. New York is the most profitable Airbnb city in the world. As far as I know. So, you know, it doesn't even have to be in Manhattan. If you're looking for Queens, I would start with Astoria. You know, it's close to Manhattan. It's convenient for the subway. And that's where tons of like millennials live. Kind of like the Williamsburg of Queens, right? It's up and coming. Rent's still relatively cheap. Look for a place that's close to the Triborough Bridge, which is, you know, that Astoria BitMars metro stop, I think. Not BitMars. Wrong. I think that's the other line. The other side. And if you get a one-bedroom place, it's probably going to cost you somewhere in the neighborhood of $2,500 a month. They're going to need first month's rent. Let's call it $2,500. You're going to need security deposit. That's another $2,500. You're going to need a broker's fee, which is typically 10% of yearly rent, which is going to be, you know, there's 12 months in a year. So instead of $2,500, that's going to be a little higher. Maybe that's going to be $3,500, yes, would broker's fee. And then you're going to need to furnish it. So you got first month, security deposit, broker's fee, furniture. That's $2,500, $2,500, $3,500, and then put $4,000 to furnish it. Call it $4,000. So 80, that's $12,500. You're going to need like cash right immediately. Which is a pretty, you know, large number, right? Fucking housing is not cheap. Once you're in, you know, you can immediately post your profile. You could start getting Airbnb tenants in there in the first week, ideally, if you're not going to live there. If you are going to live there and you only want to Airbnb sometimes, then you could Airbnb, you know, 10, 12 days a month, which is going to pay for your rent. And you can crash on someone's couch. The good thing about New York is a bunch of guys in the group that live in New York, so you guys can all kind of couch surf with each other. Maddie's there. Kevin's there. Scott Meltzer just got a place there that he's going to Airbnb. Patrick's there, although he's leaving. So, you know, you guys actually, what would be smart is if you all had your own place and all turns kind of Airbnb to pay your own rent, just slept on each other's couches, day game together when that's going on. Essentially what, you know, Jesse and I have done for the last 4 years is, me, Jesse, Luis, Josh, Justin, a lot of the mods from the group is, you know, we get places, we're booked, we stay at each other's places and party anyways. And, you know, being able to pack up and leave immediately to take a booking. So to make a long story short, we just packed everything up and fucking left. And we went to one of our other places. And then the people ended up canceling, they didn't even show up for the reservation. So we got to keep all the money. And then we didn't even have to leave. So we packed up, we were about to leave, then we didn't have to. So that happens too sometimes, which is pretty awesome. Now the tough part for Airbnb is finding places where you're allowed to Airbnb, because technically it's against the lease in almost all cases. It's very rare to find a lease where your landlord's like, yeah, I don't care if Airbnb. It's because for them, it's more traffic. It's kind of a headache for them, but it's not that big of a deal. So really important that you guys remember this speech. It's not hard to remember. It's just fucking common sense. When you're looking to rent a place, you have two options. You can either rent it, do Airbnb and not tell them. Eventually they'll find out and there's not a whole lot they can even do to stop you, but I'm not going to get into the legality of that. It's not illegal to break a lease. It's just a breaking of a contract, which they could essentially try to sue you for in court, which almost never happens. So remember, all you have to do is either, you have two options. You can either do Airbnb behind their back, or you can tell them from the get-go, you say, hey, I travel a lot for work. When I'm gone, I hate for this place to just sit empty and for me to pay, you know, this sizable rent. I'm going to furnish the place myself. You have my security deposit. I'm going to get renter's insurance. Would it be okay if I occasionally subletted to help me offset that cost for the rent? Some landlords are going to be like, you mean like Airbnb? No way. And then I'll be that. Others will be like, I don't know, maybe. Yeah, sure, fine, whatever. A lot are going to be okay with it. Or they might ask for an additional security deposit or a little bit more rent. And then that's up to you if you want to do that. So if you have their approval and it's in the lease that you're allowed to sublet, then you're fucking golden. You can do whatever the fuck you want with the place. Or if you just do it behind their back, you can usually get away with it for anywhere between 3 and 6 months, sometimes longer, before they catch you. In which case, they'll probably tell you to stop, and you can either listen or you can keep doing it, or you can move out. There's a million things you can do once that happens. And let's see. So that's, you know, it's your call. If you want to, if you have that conversation and they say no, then you definitely don't get to keep the place. So it's always a gamble. Do you want to have the conversation and be, you know, scot-free when it comes to Airbnb, or do you want to, you know, do it behind their back? In the past, I've had properties where they were just too good and I couldn't risk having that conversation. So I used fake pictures on my profile. When you put your place up on Airbnb, when you put the address is not shown publicly. So there's no way for someone to look at your listing and know it's your house unless they know what the pictures of your house looks like. But if they're fake pictures, then they won't know. The problem with fake pictures is then your guests are going to see the pictures and show up to the house, and they might be like, well, this isn't the place that I wanted. I want a refund, which, you know, obviously is bad for business, bad for reviews. But as long as your pictures are slightly worse than the place they're showing up to, they're going to be pleasantly surprised, or they're just not going to notice or not going to care. So that's one way where you can pretty much guarantee you're not going to get caught Airbnb-ing. If they have no evidence of a profile, it's very hard for them to prove that you're Airbnb-ing. If you have a doorman, that makes it a lot tougher, right? So look for buildings that don't have doormen either.
So Robbie, I could talk now, so that's good. So now that you've broken it down for me, let me kind of ask you some more specific questions. So my situation right now is I have an apartment. It's a one bedroom apartment. It's in Queens. It's close to train stations and stuff. I don't have a lease on it. It's going month by month, and the price for the apartment is really good that I'm paying. So what I was thinking is, you know, I have room to move around right now. So I wanted to know if you think it's maybe worth it to put it up on Airbnb and try to get another spot for myself, a nicer place, maybe even a place with multiple bedrooms, and then Airbnb those out too. Cause then I'll have like 2-3 apartments almost that I'm Airbnb-ing. So I'm trying to do this more like that. Like, what do you think about that?
Wait, so the cliff notes are, you have a place right now, you're month to month. You're not living there? What is it?
I would say I am occupying the apartment, but what I was thinking was, because I kind of want to leave the apartment, but the price is really good and I have a month to month. Like, I really, like, it would be like throwing away an asset almost if I just moved out just like that, you know?
Yeah, keep that shit Airbnb at full time.
Right? That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, it's furnished and everything?
It's furnished and everything. I don't have to do shit.
Yeah. Managing an Airbnb place can be a huge pain in the ass. There's a lot that goes into it. You got to deal with inquiries. You got to deal with bookings. You got to deal with cleaners. You got to deal with key exchanges. So you can basically hire us to do that for you, and we also help you optimize your revenue. So even though you're paying us, you're getting a huge value back because what you're making more off the place than you would make by doing it on your own.
That's
options are to do it yourself. You can either do it yourself, right? And then you can have a side business, or you can have us do it.
So my situation is, I mean, as you know, I'm in medical school, so I don't really have much time on my hands. Right. The thing is, like, this is something obviously we could talk about later, but I have someone who is here who can manage it. Like, he doesn't really do much except for kind of like works for me almost. So he can manage it, but, you know, I would still be interested in what you had to say just because of your experience and stuff. So, all right.
But yeah, man, you're fucking ready to rock and roll.
Good. Cool.
So yeah, if you want to talk about the management and all that, just talk to me. You can talk offline.
Yeah, definitely. We'll definitely talk about that.
Thank you. All right. What other questions you guys got?
Oh, I have a question.
Yeah.
Okay. So, I was out a few nights ago. I was out, you know, in the city, whatever. And so a few of my friends were having a birthday party at this club, Le Souk, it was called.
Yeah.
So Yeah, so I went there a little after everybody had already gotten there. Problem was, I was walking up with me and three other dudes. So if it was me by myself, I would have probably been able to get in. But when I walked up there with four dudes, they said, oh, you need to buy a bottle to get in. So we were like, all right, you know what? We're good right now. Anyway, my friends came out, and with them was this one chick, right? And she was pretty tipsy. And as soon as she saw me, she was like, I could tell, like, I need to talk to this girl. Like, she was like, you know, into me. Within the first 5 minutes of me meeting her, I was basically leaning up on a car and she was in my arms within the first 5 minutes, which is something that's pretty unusual for me. But, you know, since I've been reading the material, I've been practicing, you know, a lot of thanks goes out to you guys. You know, I was able to, you know, just be cool with it, go with it. So basically my question is this: when a girl is showing you like that she's interested like that, how are you supposed to play that? Are you supposed to play it cool or like, you know, like not too like into her, or should I just, you know, all my attention is on her now, or, you know, like what's the right way to play that?
Well, remember, like think of sexual escalation as a dance. And you're the man, so your job is to lead that dance, right? So if she's giving you green lights, like, hold me, kiss me, make out with me, fuck me, like, it's your job to see those lights and full speed ahead. So it sounds like she was probably ready to go. Like, she's leaning up against you and, like, in your arms.
Yeah.
Like you know.
Oh, yeah,
If you kiss her, you want to read her body language, right? Like, if you start kissing her and she's like full on making out with you, then that's like green light. You could probably then like, yo, let's get out of here. Let's jump in a cab, go back to your place and bang her.
Right.
So, you know, if you're making out with her and then she pulls away and then she's like, let's get some food, you know, then that's a little different story, right? You can be like, oh,
right,
let's go back to my place. I can cook, right? And then she's just like, no, about that. And you're probably not going to bang her that night.
Right. So, I tried to isolate with her. I was close, but it didn't happen. And then unfortunately what ended up happening was that she got a little too nice and she started like throwing up and stuff. So I was like, all right, I'm going to back off. And I just left. But
Yeah.
So but I was just curious as to, okay, you know, so another thing what happened was like, so she was holding my hand and stuff. We were walking, like, you know, like leading her to the next place, whatever. And I didn't really know what to say at that point, right? Which is, you know, whatever. I was still like, you know, smiling and making do. But because of that, I feel like, you know, she was kind of like, and because I wasn't sure how to play it, she ended up with another one of my friends and she was like trying to hold his hand. And then he was like, nah, like you were with her, you know? So, in a situation like that, like you said, like I'm supposed to lead the sexual attention or whatever. But if I see a girl is like, you know, trying to play those kind of games, like how should I play that?
Well, what it sounds like happened was things escalated really quickly. You didn't escalate fast enough. Like, it sounds like this girl wanted to get fucked in the bathroom, or she wanted to be pulled in the alley and get fucked right away. And
she did. She did. She was grabbing my junk.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, that's how you fucked up. You just didn't escalate fast enough. Like, she was like, this guy's boring. He's not going to fuck me. So let me see if this guy will fuck me. Just want to get fucked.
Well, so, we actually were going back to a hotel, like, but with the group, though. Like, it was like four or five of them. Yeah.
You're taking
it
back
one
on one. Why would you go back to the group?
Right. Okay. Yeah. Hell yeah.
Or you tell your buddies, like, yo, guys, I'm fucking out. You know, like, oh, where are you going? Fuck you. Suck my dick. I'm going to go get laid. You have fun masturbating. So, you know, if that's the friends that you're with.
Nah, they would have been cool with it, but yeah, I should have just.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, if you're one-on-one with a girl and she's ready to go, like, the worst thing you can do is go back to a group situation.
Okay.
You're going backwards.
Definitely, definitely. Okay.
Good question. What else? I'll stay on as long as you guys have questions. Didn't prepare any content since Sunday. But, you know, you guys have got him. Fire him away.
Hey, I'm pushing too much sometimes. What are some things to do to pull away? Or is that just too common sense, just pull away?
What's that?
What are some of the things you do to push pull? I'm mostly pushing with some girls, and just your thoughts on pulling away.
I mean, if you're pushing and getting results, then what? Like, you're good, right? Do you feel like you're escalating too fast and hitting a wall?
Sometimes. But yeah, no, I'm getting good results. It's just, I'm just like, how do you feel out when to do the push pull kind of stuff?
Well, it's really like, I think you're getting caught up in like, ooh, there's this thing called push pull. And like, I don't know if I'm doing it right. Right. Like, your question tells me, like, I don't think you really understand what push-pull is or why you would need it. Can you answer
okay.
that?
Yeah.
I think your question was kind of similar to what I was asking, right? As far as, like, you know, there's this girl, you feel like she's interested, she may not be interested. How much attention do you pay to her, right? Like, would you agree with that?
Yeah, I'm just getting some feedback that I'm not warming the girl up enough. You know, I mean, the girl, I went over to her house and, you know, I met her at Corduroy.
She
actually said
right?
that.
So
like our first date, I was like, why didn't this happen on our first date? She said, because you were all over me and I needed some time to warm up to you.
But think of it this way. It's really simple. When you do, you escalate and she either escalates back or she does nothing. If she keeps doing nothing, that's usually a bad sign. And it means she's usually ready to stop you, right? So you start making out with her. You're making out. Is she like giving you as much tongue as you're giving her? Are you like grabbing her ass? Is she grabbing you? Are you like, you know, playing with her hair? Is she caressing you? Or is she just like a dead fish? Right? If you go to grab her pussy, does she grab your dick? You're basically looking for reciprocity. So if she's not reciprocating, then you know you're escalating at a faster rate than her. And ideally, you want her to be escalating faster than you. Like, you want to grab her, start making out with her, and if she immediately starts grabbing her your dick, like what happened to Moz, then you know she's ready to go. If you're not getting that reciprocation, then you can just kind of like, you know, slow down, take a step back, and let her try to, like, put it on a little bit. Make sense, Joel?
Oh, yeah, totally. Got it. Thanks.
And push-pull is basically just that. Like, you grab her pussy, does she grab your dick? If the answer is no, then you either, you know, continue doing that. If she stops you, now you're kind of screwed. Or you pull back and you wait for her to do it to you. Or you pull back further where you even stop kissing her. And then she'll be like, oh, what did I do wrong? Maybe I need to escalate more.
Okay. Totally got it. Thanks.
Mm-hmm. All right. I'll talk to you guys on Wednesday. Thanks for being on the call. Later.
All right, thanks, Robbie. Bye.